Welcome to our program. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you for joining us here on this program. Stay with us. We have a special announcement coming up a little later on. That special event is coming up. It's coming up. Well, today we're going to be talking about, for some, a very sensitive subject, death and dying, transitioning, if you'd like to call it that, of family members, loved ones, and including our pets and so forth, and looking at it in a new way. Join us, won't you please?
Walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Understanding the process is a little difficult, but understanding the emotions and the grieving and what have you is probably one of the more difficult things that we go through in this dimension, in this life. And we're going to try to look at this process from a little different perspective with the author of The Last Adventure of Life. That, believe it or not, is also the name of the website, www.thelastadventureoflife.com. And our guest is Reverend Maria Dancing Heart, and I want to welcome you to our program. It's nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Richard. It's wonderful to be here.
We're going to do everything we can today, Maria, to keep this on an upbeat, if you will, to stay more positive, to encourage people, because there's already enough sadness, fear, and anxiety over this process as it is, when we're the ones, as I've kind of phrased it, who are left behind. And so we want to try to talk a little bit about that, but we're also going to talk a great deal about many of the things that you are involved with and in, as well as things that you help you provide to help people through this process. And I know that for the individual who is going through this process called transition, there are all kinds of things going on in their minds.
Yeah,
and I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, was it not Elizabeth Kubler-Roth who came up with the, what was it, the seven steps in
stages,
transitioning?
The stages of death.
Yeah, and that was for the individual who was going through that process, who was going to be moving on. Is that not correct?
Correct.
What are the stages, if there are any, and or steps, that we go through when we lose a loved one, or... Give us a little information on that.
Yes, well, they're very similar, actually, because grief is similar across the board, and there are similar cycles that we all cycle through, but they're not real set, you know, in stone, they just keep cycling back around, you might say. And, of course, the first one is often shock and or denial, and we don't even want to hear, we can't stand to hear that someone has just died, or, you know, especially when there's been a suicide or something very sudden, it just takes sometimes a whole long time for it to just sink in that we have lost this loved one, or that it's going to happen. So that's initial. Then there's often anger, frustration, a time of bargaining, a time when we say, hey, God, you know, is there any way we can get this out of here, and I'll do whatever it takes, you know, to change what might have to happen here. And then in the end, there's often acceptance and a sense of, well, resignation even. Well, and depression can come in before that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, all throughout, there's sorrow and lamentation and just kind of a sense of sadness. But in the end, the hope is that there is a sense of acceptance and peace that can come in. And then, like I said earlier, all of this can be recycling. And, you know, just when you feel like you've come to acceptance, you know, another feeling can come in. And the emotions are just going haywire sometimes when we deal with especially sudden death or sudden grief.
I know that with each experience, we have a different series of emotions because we have a different connection with that individual or that being.
Yes.
I can still recall, it's amazing how vivid the memories are of, as a child, being asked to leave the church at my grandmother's funeral mass because I was just so upset. And yet another experience when I was 22, 23, thereabouts, mm-hmm. a close friend of a coworker at a radio station I was working for passed on. And I had this feeling of, oh, wow, he's everywhere now. Mm-hmm. He's not really gone, you know.
Right.
It's amazing the dichotomy there.
Yes, yes.
Now, you have a unique perspective.
Mm-hmm. And then you were in a very different place in your life. You know, you had grown and evolved so you could see it in a new way. I remember that after my mother died and thinking, well, the good part here is that I can contact her now anytime, anywhere, you know, because we had been apart physically, so it would take a phone call or a long visit, you know, far away trip to get there to see her. But now I could talk. It was cosmic. You know, it's like she's just a thought away, and yeah. I would have conversations with her as I was driving up and down I-5 to my classes and so forth.
And you have a unique point of view because you were raised in Japan.
Correct.
Now,
I have the distinction of being conceived in the U.S., born in Japan, born in Tokyo, Japan. So I say I've been a bridge builder before I was even born.
And that's one heck of a long bridge, too, by the way.
Yes, it is. Well, and then we've had a war, you know, that tainted the whole thing. My parents were actually supposed to go to Africa, and 6 months before they were headed there, they got a call asking if they would go to the enemy country, you might say, you know, and they had to pray about it before they accepted.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. So this was only a few years after the war in 54, I guess, they were headed over there.
So with your exposure, if you will, your being in that culture, the Japanese culture, mm-hmm. and this is something we talked about off air, what has been your experience there, and what can you share and shed light on as far as a few of the other cultural differences in different parts of the world as they have dealt with death and dying?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know in Japan, I have, speaking of memories, I have a distinct recollection when a classmate of ours in elementary school was sick and dying. Well, he was very sick for quite a while, and we made tsuru, peace cranes for him, because the crane is a reminder of longevity and health and vitality. So I remember that's when I learned how to make the peace cranes, and we did this for him. But then after he died, we all were surrounding his home as the Buddhists came and did a ceremony for him with chanting and incense and all of this. But one of the gifts in Japan that happens around death is after the death occurs, then every month on the day that death occurred, like say the person died on the 19th of June, then every 19th of the month for the first year, someone from the Buddhist temple comes, the priest or someone, and does the chanting and sort of the connecting with the loved one, if you will. So there's this therapeutic remembering, you know, that happens on a monthly basis. And then there's the connect with the priest and with the religious person, if you will. So there's like that healing and repetition and connecting with the other side that happens in a natural and ritualistic way that I think is probably very helpful and very healing for people. And many cultures have their own ways of honoring the time around death. Like in the Native American tradition, the 3 days before and after a death is considered very sacred. And those times, you know, people are encouraged to be quiet and reflective and just thoughtful around the person and around the death. Of course, in Ireland, you have the wake, the time of remembering and celebrating that person's life. And, mm-hmm. you know, many cultures have wonderful ways of remembering, and this is key, I believe, and also honoring the grief and creating space for as much crying and wailing. I think of the wailing wall they have in Jerusalem, you know, how helpful to have a place where people can go and pray and wail and let the emotions out. I think in our culture, we can become so staid, and we think that people are weak if they cry, and, you know, yeah. Oh, you got to buck up and
get over it.
Yeah, get over it, you know, and get back to busyness. Well, just getting back to business as usual doesn't cut it, because, you know, business is not as usual. And you expend a lot of energy pushing all the emotions down and acting as if you're fine, and you're not.
Yeah.
So I really value the cultures. There's a African tribe that a woman named Sobhomfu Somme, she speaks of this, an African tribe where you are really encouraged to grieve after you've grieved. And people, her relatives would ask her, have you grieved, have you cried enough yet, you know? Can you imagine having someone say that to you here in the States?
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Instead of, you know, stop that nonsense. You know, don't be a weakling. Don't cry, as if somehow being in touch with your emotions is a bad thing.
I remember the experience my wife and I had after traveling to Ireland. We'd become good friends with some folks over there, and we were calling over there in September after having been there in February of that year, And we were told by the husband that the wife, whom my wife became very close to and close with on our journey there, had passed away. Mm-hmm. And he began describing, and maybe it was his daughter who had described anyway to us the process, that there was the wake, and it went on for a week. The body was there in the home for an entire week, and people were going through the house almost nonstop.
Mm.
And this was a small little community of, like, I guess about 1,200 or 1,300 people.
Mm.
But the week that we were there staying in their bed and breakfast, she was going to a funeral almost every day.
Mm.
There's something about a close-knit, small community that they face death and dying differently than in a big city.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you're right. You know, there's a sense of real personal and community and gathering together and continuity, you know, that doesn't happen in the city, where things are much more impersonal and we're just not as connected with each other because we don't take the time to even know who our neighbors are sometimes, you know. Whereas in a small community, you don't get away from your neighbors and you rely on your neighbors. You know, I think of when I lived on Whidbey Island, you're much more independent, so you also then find yourself needing to be more dependent on your community of people. So there's a close-knitness and an honoring of one another and a community building that happens in a small community that cannot happen in the same way in a less personal, you know, city life situation.
It's something that we all are going to face as individuals someday, and it's the experience that we have all, in one way or another, have faced as we have moved through this lifetime, with whether it's the loss of a mother, a father, a brother, a sister, an aunt, an uncle, grandparents.
Yes.
And if you've not experienced that, then maybe you've experienced the loss of a pet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And sometimes that can be equally, if not more, devastating.
Yes.
Because there is such a different bond.
Yes.
And I have been through that 4 times. Mm. The 4th time was actually the easiest, and not because it became easier, but mm-hmm. because of the process that my wife and I went through. We had put down 3 dogs who were very old mm-hmm. and ailing, and it was just their time. The 4th, we allowed to die naturally. He wasn't in any pain. He wasn't suffering.
Mm-hmm.
He just laid down one day and he went to sleep.
Mm.
And I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about putting him in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That was an interesting experience for me in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But the process by which we give the being dignity in dying.
Yeah.
And I won't ask you to take a position on this, although if you choose to elaborate, that's fine. What about giving one another the right and the ability to die with dignity? If I yeah. tell you, do not put me on life support,
mm-hmm.
and yet you do, how are you showing me respect and honoring me and my wishes?
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, this is what's so beautiful about hospice, is that hospice is understood that we will not, you know, prolong or add to the life of a person. And this is what's gotten us into trouble in our culture. Rabbi Schachter Shalomi of Boulder, Denver, Colorado, talks about this. He says that one of the reasons our culture has gotten so hung up about death and even birth is that we have pathologized death and birth by taking it to the hospital. And the problem with the hospital is the doctors have been trained to keep life going. You know, life has become the be-all and end-all, and we've gotten ourselves cut off from the fact that, well, but there's a piece here that's missing, that death is a part of life.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I'm striving to do, my message, is to bring death back into life. It is part of the natural cycle of life, and this is the gift of hospice.
Mm-hmm.
Hospice is helping people die in their own homes or in their adult family homes or, you know, wherever they happen to be. We try to help those who are working with them already to enable or strengthen them, to give them the courage, the encouragement to die where they are and to care for the dying so that they can die in a natural setting. And I think of a woman who really the title of my book came from. Her situation was that she was in her 70s, she had lung cancer, and she really had lived a full, you know, a challenging sometimes, but full life, and she was ready to die. So she was on our hospice, and she chose not to eat. So she was no longer eating. She had oxygen because of her lung cancer, and she had liquids still, fluids that she was taking, but she was no longer eating. And one day she talks to me, and she says, "You know, Maria, I'm looking forward to the last adventure of life."
Mm.
And I thought, wow, you know, those words just rung in my ears. I thought, if everyone could look at death as the last adventure of this life,
yeah,
then we don't have to have that fear around it. And lo and behold, she had one of the most peaceful and amazing deaths ever. Her family would gather in the in her room in the evenings for the Mariners games. You know, the Mariners were doing really well in that season, and I'm sure they won that night. They had an unusually large party in her room with lots of grandkids and, you know, the whole family. Well, after they all left, she made one phone call to one of her daughters, and it was kind of a good night call, but also a goodbye call. And sure enough, an hour after that, she took her last breath.
Hmm.
And it, you know, even the doctor, the hospice doc, was surprised, you know, because she went so graciously and so smoothly. But I maintain that it was because she had no fear. She was really ready, at peace. And in fact, she had told me a day or two before that, you know, Maria, my tummy's kind of gassy and I'm just not comfortable anymore. I'm really ready to go. So we were praying, and she had a Lutheran church, I think, they were all praying for her to go, and lo and behold, she got to go. And so, you know, you could say that she willed herself to die that way, or, you know, she had a vision, and she had the support. She talked openly with all her family members about all of this, with hospice. She had the support of hospice. So she was blessed, both in her own courage and knowledge and truth, but also by the community and the hospice that was surrounding her, to go in just the way she planned it, you could say, you know?
Incredible.
Trusting that the last adventure was awaiting her.
Well, it brings to mind two thoughts. A humorous line from an old television series of Bob Newhart. He and his wife are going on and on about death, because that episode he'd faced death in an empty elevator shaft. And she's saying, well, but Bob, as you just stated, Maria, that it's a part of life. And of course, Bob's response in fear is, yeah, but it's the last part. And so I thought that was really funny. I actually had a guest on who was sharing with me about a woman, a 98-year-old woman, who was very spry, who was very active, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And she turned to my friend one day and she said, you know what? I've done everything I want to do here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready to go. The woman wasn't depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. She wasn't upset. She wasn't in pain. She wasn't terminal.
Right.
She was just finished.
Right.
And she says, I'm ready. I want to see what's on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
I have, in the last 10 or 15 years, have begun to envy those people.
Yeah.
I'm saddened when I hear of some of my favorite musicians that I enjoy listening to who die in a plane crash or who pass on due to this or that or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But after the initial shock, I go, oh, I wonder what it's, I wish I could go with them and yet still come back here. I wonder what it's like over there. There's that childlike curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
none of us really knows what's over there.
No. Although we hear glimmers, you know, this is what's very exciting in hospice work too, is I'm always hearing little snippets about, well, you're not going to believe this, but, you know, and people will share very mystical things that have happened to them or
mm-hmm.
the visions that they've seen or heard, and they're often just very, very special and make you really wonder, gosh, you know, what is it going to be like on the other side?
Well, we're going to help people to work through this process, those of us who are here, and maybe even help those who are in that process themselves. The last stages here in this adventure and heading towards that last adventure by encouraging you to go to, there are several websites and they are going to elicit some additional questions. One of them is thelastadventureoflife.com. That's the title of the book as well, by my guest, Reverend Maria Dancing Heart. And again, that's thelastadventureoflife.com. Again, that's also the title of the book. Now, you are, as you've stated, you've talked quite a bit about hospice, and you're involved with that organization. And I have to say that it is a truly wonderful organization. But you also provide a wonderful little... little gifts, if you will. You have what's called a gift basket, a soul basket.
Soul basket, I'm calling them, yes.
And people can find out more about the soul baskets at soulbaskets, plural, soulbaskets.com,
mm-hmm.
and what have you. But give us a little insight into how these came about and what they contain.
Well, the soul baskets came about from the book. They actually birthed themselves right out of the book, you could say. Because last summer I was with a friend and was reading about some gift baskets and a woman who had developed gift baskets in New Hampshire. And all of a sudden it was like a light bulb went on and I thought, I could put some gift baskets together, but with a real purpose, you know, coming out of my book. In the last chapter of my book, I have healing resources for further inquiry, I call it. And these are complementary and integrative therapies, or you might call them, you know, like aromatherapy and acupuncture, acupressure, all the ancient modalities that are coming back to bless us these days. And so I've picked a few of those. I love the essential oils. I use Young Living essential oils all the time. So I've picked a few of the oils. I've picked some music, some CDs, both with lyrics. Like my favorite is Denise Hagen of Ireland. She has a beautiful CD out called For Those Who Hear. So I have her CDs. I have Cynthia Snodgrass's CDs that are East and West chants. She calls it Dream Chants East and West, with Gregorian chants as well as Hindu or Sanskrit chants. And then I have CDs that are guided meditations with people like Joel Levy and Mary Delaney. These are helpful to just help you relax. And see, one of the keys to this transition, whole transition process in my mind, is relaxation. If we can relax enough, we can get through just about any change. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's when we're fighting and when we're all keyed up and tense that we resist and it's hard. But if we can deepen the breathing and if we can relax and enjoy the aroma of a beautiful oil, for instance, then it's easy to go through and go through the portal, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also have developed a mini book. I'm right now sort of between books, if you will. I'm down to the last very few remaining copies of the first edition, and the second edition of The Last Adventure of Life is coming out of Findhorn Press of Scotland. I'm very excited. So we're just working on the details of the second edition for May. So in between, I've developed these mini books. I had a pocket book from the Healing Codes, and I thought, gosh, I could put something like this together related to my book. So I have intros to all the different chapters of the book in the pocketbook. So I have a small pocketbook and then a large print pocket version that can go in these soul baskets. And I've developed what I call a love basket for the caregiver, a joy basket for anyone moving through any transition. That's kind of the care of the soul, I call it too. Then the hope or letting go basket for the grieving person, and then a trust basket or a final gifts basket for the one and their family who's actually preparing for the final transition. And each one has a little different, you know, blend of things, items in it. But I'm also very open to putting together something customized or like a sampler basket. I came up with the idea that, oh, for $44, we could do a sampler basket that would have one CD, one oil, and one mini book or pocket book. And then these are all wrapped. I wanted to bring the Japanese flavor to this. So instead of a typical basket, I'm using a furoshiki. Now, a furoshiki is a beautiful Japanese cloth that traditionally you carried your gifts in. But it's become something that you can carry anything in. It's just a piece of cloth. You put your items in the middle. You could even take it to the grocery store and pack your groceries in it. So it's a wonderfully green way to carry your belongings. And so every basket will be wrapped in one of these furoshiki that I get directly from Japan, actually. I've found a fellow who's been very helpful in getting those to me. So
that's
it's
wonderful.
A very multicultural experience, if you'd like. I'm calling them gift baskets with a soul purpose.
I like that. I like
that. My soul baskets, yeah.
Well, two things that I want to address, but first I want to let you know you're listening to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. My guest is the Reverend Maria Dancing Heart. She has written a book that is in between printings, if you will, or editions, but it is called The Last Adventure of Life. The second edition will be coming out in May. You can go to the website, thelastadventureoflife.com. She also has available, as she's just described to us, these soul baskets, soulbaskets.com, www.soulbaskets.com. And we are going to be talking here in the second half of our program about a lot of other areas in regards to transitioning. But I also want to let you know that we have an event coming up on the 22nd of March. Now, if you go to the website today, you will see that I've added another clue, another piece of information to this mysterious event that's taking place on the 22nd of March. And it's going to be taking place that Saturday, and it'll be taking place at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I want you to mark your calendars. I will be giving you the final piece of information next Saturday at this time of 11 o'clock, 11 a.m. Saturday morning here on 1340 a.m. Progressive Talk, 1340 a.m. We're going to get back right now to Maria Dancing Heart, and you, as I said before, as you're sharing all of this, this subject has been, I don't want to say it's near and dear to my heart, but it's something that when I was working for the religious broadcasting company or station back in the 80s and early 90s, that was a subject. Death and dying was a subject that I wanted to do a series of interviews on. I wanted to talk with ministers and pastors and even funeral home directors and people who care for the remains, if you will, the shell, the vehicle in which the soul resided during its lifetime here. And really get into this discussion to demystify it, to demortify it, because people, they cringe when you want to talk about all of the details, which, again, we're not going to necessarily get into here, but to give it a more positive perspective. Now, you talk about dealing with death and dying and grief and transitioning of all kinds from a new perspective. Now, we've probably already covered it in the first half, but it's been spread out over a half hour or so. So tell us, what is this new way of looking at death, dying, and grief?
Well, I would say that it's a way of bringing a sense of, well, first of all, bringing it back into the cycle of life so that, as Clarissa Pinkola Estes says in a story she tells, you know, when we are born, death comes in with us. Death is always perched on our shoulder. You know, people in the olden days would keep skulls on their desks as a reminder that death could come any time. You know, we act as if we have until old age, but nobody knows when death is going to show up. And the Mexican culture and many cultures around the world do a very good job of reminding their people that death is a part of life. We do this at Halloween, you know, and at All Saints Day and certain times of the year, maybe more than others, or in Lent when we're thinking about the suffering of Jesus. In fact, that's right now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But we're not very good year round at honoring the reality that death walks with us at all times. So bringing death back into the circle of life and then creating a situation such that we're not so afraid of death. We see into the mystery of it and the mystical communications that happen between this world and the next. And we honor the interconnectedness of everything. And even though someone has died, you know, they're still with us. They're like we said earlier, they're cosmically connected to us. And I've had, personally, thanks to hospice work and hospice people I've met, I've gone and had readings in which I've been able to connect with my mother, for instance, again. And I'm totally convinced that she is with me. I've learned that she's one of my guides and works with me, she and along with my unborn brother. And, you know, these kinds of things have taught me so much about the fact that there is so much more than meets the eye. And in our scientific culture, we tend to deny anything that we cannot touch or see or taste or, you know, beyond anything, the five senses, we say, oh, you know, that's woo-woo or that's psychic, that doesn't count. But the reality is we're becoming multidimensional beings, and we are learning that there is so much more than meets the eye. The sixth sense, you know, the intuition is a powerful, powerful thing. And, for instance, the more we meditate and the more we honor the beingness of life, the more this develops in us and the more our consciousness grows. Ken Wilber, you've probably heard, talks about if we meditate for 3 or 4 years, our consciousness, without effort, jumps a few notches just from the sense that active meditation and that active being, if you will. So these are the things that we can develop in our lives and in our culture so that we don't have to be afraid of death anymore, and we can bring it back into the living room, if you will, back into our lives on a daily basis. So then we can let go of the fear. And it's critical that we do this today, Richard, because we are in a time when everything and everyone is dying, figuratively speaking. You know, the old paradigm, the old consciousness is no longer working. So we are in a place, I say, the whole world's on hospice.
Right, it's now one of the reasons why we have this program, to bring new paradigms for a new world.
Yes, so it's not just about people who are dying today, although many are dying, and sometimes very quickly and very graciously, but also very unnaturally, if you will. You know, people don't expect a 40-year-old to get a real serious cancer and have to face death, but these things are happening, and, you know, they're on Oprah, and people are seeing that these things are happening. Just yesterday, I learned from a friend of my daughter's, daughter was taking a photography class, and she had a little event over at the museum, and her friend came up and said, well, this is rather morbid, but I have to tell you, my husband's coworker just committed suicide on Monday. So here this whole family and their friends are dealing with a suicide. So, you know, there's tremendous upheaval going on in our culture and in our world across cultures. So the more we can learn to accept and live with death, the more peaceful we can be about going through it, I believe.
Indeed. As a Reiki master, my wife and I facilitated sending energy to my father's brother, who was dying of terminal cancer.
Beautiful.
And so we were able to get a photograph of him, and we did our session, if you will. About, I want to say a few days later, I got the phone call that he had passed on. But my mother had related to my wife and I of the experience before his passing, of how he had enough strength to get up into his wheelchair, roll across the property or compound where his son lived on a, in a house on the same property. He went over, and I guess they shared some words or what have you. He was able to have enough strength to get angry enough to throw his medication across the room. And then I guess within a few hours after that, he passed. Now, the interesting thing is that everything that I learned about Reiki, we weren't trying to heal him. What we were doing was sending the energy to him to do with it as he saw fit for his purposes. And what he saw fit was to finish whatever business that he had and transition. Is that, and you used the example of people, and we put this, what'd you say, pathology on dying? And we go to the hospital, and that's where the doctors are trying to save our lives. When in fact, what hospice is about is giving people the opportunity, if you will, and the safe space to transition when they're ready.
And it puts the ball in their court. I just learned about an amazing woman in our town here, Seattle, who's the director of the hospice over at Evergreen. And I was reading a piece in the paper about her. She's also a musician and does this one-woman show called Charisma. So I went to see it. But in the paper, she talks about how hospice is beautiful because it helps you jump off the medical train. And then we evaluate on an individual basis, what makes sense for that particular patient, that particular individual, instead of telling the body what to do in terms of routinely ordering another test, you know, or doing this and that on the body, we let the body tell us. And I thought that is so true from the spiritual perspective, too, because I've done spiritual and bereavement counseling with hospice, and this is what we do. We don't go in with an agenda to tell the person how they should believe or what they should do or say. We hear them, you know, we hear all the individual, collective, different individual, particular stories, and then we help them strengthen their spiritual beliefs or help them with their particular questions or issues so that they can bring a sense of closure and a sense of peace or a sense of encouragement to help them get to the highest level they can go as they're transitioning.
What about the experiences upon children? Have you noticed in other parts of the world, as well as here in the United States, is there a difference between the way children experience and or express themselves? I mean, I know what I went through, but I have a feeling that part of that was due to a lot of the messages that I had received up to that point about loved ones and the loss thereof, and of course the connection that I had with my grandmother. As opposed to the messages that I received up to and including the time when I was 23, when this gentleman, this woman's husband passed away, and I had that elated feeling of, he's everywhere, he's not really gone. So somehow I made the transition. Maybe there was some more of a distance between myself and this gentleman as opposed to my grandmother. But I'm wondering about children around the world. Do they, is it just still just as universal? They still suffer just as much?
Well, I think children really are our teachers. You know, so often we think we have to take care of the children and explain things to them, but then out of their mouths pop these things that are so, you know, wise and so, but grandma's with us all the time now, you know, or the children will just come up with the most amazing things. And I think what I realize from this is that they are the ones who are close to spirit, you know. They just came from spirit more, much more recently than we did. So if we give them the space and don't try to be the killjoy, you know, and take it all away from them and don't write the spirit out of them, then they can be the teachers to us. And this is why it's so important to allow them to come to the funerals and allow them to be with us through the dying experience and not try to protect them. And I think we're getting better as a culture here because we do honor and allow the children, or sometimes we might let them make the decision, as opposed to saying, "Oh, you're not allowed," you know, or you're not going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But we bring them into the decision making process and let their wisdom guide us too. So it becomes a two-way street, and we really see that our children have so much to teach us around spiritual matters. I've certainly found this true with my own daughter. You know, she's just full of wisdom, so I've learned to really pay attention to her and listen to her rather than tell her what I think she should do or what I think the situation is about. You know?
I think it's a lot of the messages that have been given to us as children that, you know, as we grow older, I hope that, and we have our own kids, we have said, you know what, I'm not going to give those messages to my children because
mm-hmm.
I want them to find for themselves. If they have questions, I'll do my
right.
utmost to answer them honestly right. instead of sugarcoating it.
Right, right, right. Because each child is different too, just
mm-hmm.
as each individual is different. And, you know, one child may love to go to church and Sunday school and really gets a lot out of that. Well, my daughter happened to be not that way. You know, I was a minister, but she wasn't really getting a whole lot out of church and or Sunday school. So we started attending a more Native American style circle, and she loved that, and she told me that. So that's what I encouraged her to go with me to more than church. You know, I didn't stop going to church, but I recognized that there was something in her that lit up with more the Native American style, where everyone is honored and the wisdom is shared rather than more a top-down approach that might happen, you know, when somebody's preaching a sermon at you or somebody's teaching you in Sunday school. So
yeah.
You need to honor what each child, where they are and what needs they have, too, and take that into consideration.
If there can be such a thing as a favorite story of death and dying or transitioning, mine would be my grandmother's, in spite of the trauma that I experienced as a child, because it was years later that I actually, and I still recall this dream to this day, that I had of her. I was doing things that at that time, I wasn't capable of doing. I was driving down a freeway in a van, and I turned off into the forest, and I came across this meadow, and there was this house, and I went in the house, and there was my grandmother. She didn't say a word. I could see it in her eyes. She gave me a hug, and at this point, that's all I can recall of that dream, but it was something that has stayed with me ever since I've had it that reminds me, just as you said, that she's with me always.
Mm-hmm. And she is,
yeah.
Truly. You know, once we're connected, we don't even have to be connected on Earth. My mother, you know, I mentioned my unborn brother.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my mother miscarried later in life, and this is what came up when I had the reading with the intuitive. But what came through was, after my mother started sharing, she was writing down, "I've met my son." Well, she had just shared something about a miscarriage. It turns out that miscarried child was a boy, and we were only three girls, see? So here, this son on the other side, my mother has now met him, and she proceeded to tell me that he is one of my bereavement guides.
Oh, wow.
So here, I've never even met my unborn brother, okay? But he is helping me in my spiritual bereavement work. So from that day forward, I write about this in Chapter 8 of my book, but from that day forward, I tell you, my life was never quite the same again, because
yeah.
I really realized, you know, there is so much more than meets the eye. I mean, who would have thought that I had an unborn brother who was guiding me on a daily basis in my hospice work?
Yeah, but we just don't know what influences
you know?
There are that are
yeah.
assisting us and supporting us. By
exactly.
the way, I was quite taken by the fact that, and you told me since that this is part of the book, The Last Adventure of Life,
mm-hmm.
that there is actually a peace crane in the book.
Oh, yes. Well, that's my, I've been a peace nick, you might say, since way back. And I guess having been this bridge between the East and the West, or Japan and America, since I was young, I truly yearn for the day when the world will be at peace. And then this peace crane has always had a special place in my heart, because I've learned to make them doing the origami. And, of course, back when my elementary school classmate was dying, we learned how to do this. So it's just sort of second nature for me to use my hands and to get beautiful origami. I go to the Daiso shop, you know, the Japanese dollar store, and find these beautiful origami for inexpensive. And then I just doodle and make them with my hands. And then now I've gotten so that every book that goes out, I make sure, well, and every soul basket that goes out, too, the peace crane is going to be on the card. But a reminder that, you know, peace starts with us. Mm-hmm. Peace starts within each one of our hearts. And the more each one builds peace in our hearts, we will build peace here in this world. I'm convinced that maybe even in my lifetime, we will create peace on earth. And I'm very excited to think about the other piece about my book is that I honor various traditions, you know, and faith traditions of the world, because I see that as we honor one another's faith and honor each other's way of being, that too will help create peace, because it's the judgment and it's the, you know, my religion is better than yours, or my God will save me, but your God ain't going to do that. You know, it's that kind of thinking, that separation thinking that's caused all the violence that we've created in the world today.
People
so, you
can
know, it's and time to let that all go and bring the unity and the harmony back.
Well, I believe that I'm hoping that in my lifetime as well that we can indeed achieve that, and that's part of the hope of this radio program, to bring about these new paradigms, these new ideas, beliefs, concepts, principles, if you will, whatever you want to call them, to create a new and lasting world. And it does have to start with each one of us. The peace within us will spread. I'm going to use the analogy like the clouds on the wind, as opposed to a virus, to others. And each person that you touch with that peace within you is going to transcend and translate and transfer to them, and then they will carry that on, and we just keep it moving. And we're going to do that giving you an opportunity to contact Maria Dancing Heart. You can do that through a couple of websites. Of course, there's thelastadventureoflife.com. That's thelastadventureoflife.com. I know these are a lot of websites, but you can also go to richarddugan.com, and there's a link to her website and to the others as well. But I'm going to give these to you. Soulbaskets.com. That's soulbaskets.com. There is also a website. It is mariadancingheart.com.
Oh, actually, that one's still in the making. I haven't quite finished that one yet.
So that one you won't be able to get to, but it'll...
But there is a phone number.
Coming to an internet near you.
888 number?
888-409-1678.
Correct.
That's 888-409-1678. And, you know, that's interesting that you should mention that toll-free number, Maria. Reverend Maria Dancing Heart, because that is a part of one of the clues to the special event coming up on the 22nd of March.
Ooh.
For the Tell Me Your Story radio program. I don't have that at hand, but it involves a toll-free number. We hope that you will keep listening to Tell Me Your Story. I love building the suspense. Early on in my relationship with my wife, I found it very difficult to surprise her with anything, because she is so intuitive. She just, it's like, why are you in my head? You know, let me surprise you at least once. So I love building the anticipation towards the surprise. And it's going to be a lot of fun, folks. I guarantee you it is going to be a blast. I am looking forward to it at least. So at least one of us is going to have some fun. And we hope that you will join us the 22nd of March at 3:00. And there's a toll-free number involved. So keep listening. Next Saturday, we're going to reveal it all on the 15th. And we are right now in the midst of Tell Me Your Story with a few minutes left with Reverend Maria Dancing Heart. And we're talking about transitioning. I've shared with you a couple of experiences I've had with two individuals. A third who passed more recently, I remember experiencing something, and while I was experiencing it, it was weird. I was even observing the experience I was having. I became extremely angry at the same time I was crying. How could you leave? I think one of my favorite lines from Leo Buscaglia, the late Leo Buscaglia, he talked about his mother who was in the hospital before her passing, and the family was over in the corner whispering. And she said, "What are you whispering about? I'm not gone yet." And she calls him over and says, you know, let me go. Let me go. It's okay. And usually we're telling them, go to the light. It's okay to go.
Mm-hmm.
And here is this woman who is obviously terminal. And she's saying, let me go. You know, don't hold me here.
Yeah.
Do we do that to these people who, in many cases, are ready, willing, and quite able to go, but they can't because we're holding on to the string?
Yes, this happens, you know. I think of the palliative care specialist nurse who on our hospice used to tell families, sometimes, you know, huge families would be in the room and somebody's always there. And she said, you need to have at least 5 minutes every hour where everybody clears out of the room so that if this person wants to go and your love is holding them on here, they can go. I thought that was pretty sound advice to clear the space every so often so that the person really could let go if they wanted to.
You know, that's an interesting look at it, too, because we become so attached to things as well as people.
People, yes.
And I can attest to the fact that when we moved to Santa Barbara area, we brought with us a truckload weighing 9,000 pounds. Now, the truck, this is beside the truck weight. This was 9,000 pounds of stuff we dragged across the desert.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've pared down considerably, but there's still stuff that we hold on to.
I know, and then even when you let go of stuff, you keep buying, you know. It seems like our culture, we're just ingrained to accumulate.
But we do that
part
with
of the issue.
Yeah, but we do that with people.
Oh, absolutely.
In that same sense of, I've had all of these wonderful experiences, I don't want you to go because I want us to have more experiences together.
Right, right. Or even friendships, you know, because sometimes it's time to let a friendship go. But you somehow feel like you can't let it go. You have to hang on to people. And we don't. We really can sometimes make life a lot easier by paring down when it's time to release something or someone from our life.
I almost wish that I'd brought this up earlier because you've opened up a doorway into an area that most people haven't thought about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, go ahead.
We think that life and things need to stay the same. And this is where there's a Buddhist concept that I share in the very first chapter of my book that's very important. You know, in the Buddhist thinking, change is the norm. So we have to remember that everyone and everything is dying all the time. And so that's where we need to put the emphasis, that change is there continuously, and therefore treat everyone and everything with deep compassion. Because everything and everyone, including the little flower out there and the tree leaf out there, it's all dying and it's all fleeting. Kind of like in Japan, the sakura cherry blossom tree is so honored because it's very fleetingly blooming just in April, you know, for a couple of weeks. And so as soon as the sakura come out, then everybody rushes down to those beautiful, beautiful streets that are lined with the sakura trees, and they have parties underneath the cherry blossoms that are blooming so gloriously, because you have to honor that fleeting moment when the beauty is there. And it's a bittersweet beauty because it's only there for a short time.
I have to say that I am, I enjoy hearing you speak these different Japanese words. Mm-hmm. I would say when you referred to the folding art, paper art, folding paper art,
as
origami. I uh-huh. would just say origami, the Americanized version. But I love I love that. There's something about the Japanese language, even though I don't speak it, nor can I understand it. But it's the sound. There's such a softer quality to that language than say Japanese or Korean or Vietnamese or what have you. Even though they're sort of kind of in a way similar because they're in the similar region of the world,
mm-hmm.
there's still that soft quality to that language, to the verb, to the pronunciation of the words.
Mm. There is a gentleness to the Japanese culture, you know. There really is.
Well, I really want to thank you for spending this time with us and gently dealing with this subject and helping our listeners to hopefully better understand and appreciate not only the life that they have, but the lives of the people around them.
Mm-hmm.
And that if to really appreciate the lives of the people around them, when it is time for them to move on,
mm-hmm.
it is okay to weep and it is okay to be angry and all of those things. And it's also okay. It's also okay to let them go.
Yes, yes. You know, there's a short quote I'd like to share. A friend through hospice work recently sent it to me. It's from the book called From Death to Rebirth. And it says, "We want our loved ones to be happy because we lived, rather than miserable because we have died."
Mm, you know, I like that.
We want our loved ones to be happy because we lived, rather than miserable because we have died. And just be grateful that we've had this person as long as we have had in our lives, you know, rather than bemoaning the fact that they have to leave us now. Because sometime or another, we all have to leave, all of us.
It speaks of legacy. It does, mm-hmm. Which also speaks of another program, which we'll have to do at another time.
Another time.
But Reverend Maria Dancing Heart, I want to thank you so much. Again, the website is thelastadventureoflife.com. You can also go to richarddugan.com. That's richarddugan.com. Go to the shows page, page 2, and go down, scroll down. You can listen to this interview again. You can also go to her website, and you can order the book, which is going to be available in its second edition in May. But you can also order some of these soul baskets, soulbaskets.com, and also get in touch with her through the toll-free number 888-409-1678. And again, I thank you so much for joining us, and please stay on the line for just a few moments, okay?
Thank you, Richard, so much for all your light and your blessings to the world.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And we ask you to stay tuned. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're going to be back here again next week at the same time, 11 a.m., 11 to noon on a Saturday, the 15th. We're going to be dealing with light orbs, and we're going to be dealing with sacred spaces. And you'll be able to learn more about all of this as we are going to be talking with a very special guest. I'll be telling you about her and her special gifts next Saturday here on Tell Me Your Story. And as always, this program is here to provide you with new paradigms for a new world. We come to you to help you, to assist you. And even as I said to one of my guests last year in October, November, I said, this is actually therapy for me too. So I'm getting a free therapy lesson every Saturday for an hour. And it's really quite nice because I'm educated and uplifted as well. And we hope we're doing that for you. Why don't you let us know? Send me an email, richard@richarddugan.com. That's richard@richarddugan, D-U-G-A-N.com. And I'll certainly respond to your email. I'd love to hear from you. And also go to the website, listen to the programs. We have quite a number, 6 months worth of radio programs, folks. And it's great to bring this program to you, and we're going to continue to do so. Again, the reminder of the special event coming up on Saturday, March the 22nd. It's at 3 o'clock, and has something to do with a toll-free number. I'm very excited, and I hope you'll join us next Saturday at the same time. I'm Richard Dugan. Love to law. Have a great day.